For the past several days, so many of you have been asking me to declutter the new labor codes. And the reason I haven't done it as yet is because I've been a little bit wary. Why? Because these are very complicated. These labor codes, I mean, you might say, declutter the labor codes, and labor codes are decluttering the existing labor laws. But what are these labor codes? There are four codes which have 411 clauses, which have 480 sections over 286 pages. So this itself is like a big scripture. So that's the reason I've been a little bit wary. Plus, it's also not my area of my domain expertise or my experience as a journalist. But one inclination was to be like the usual student, which is that in the exam, I will have the option of answering 5 questions out of 8. One will come from the labor code, so let me leave this out, it's too much for me. But I know that you are very exacting teachers and very good viewers and listeners, and you are also very forgiving. So I had to work on it, which is what I have done today with the help of 3 brilliant colleagues. One of our editors, Moshmi Das Gupta, she covers the government and she's been covering the labor codes. Also Apurva Mandhani and Tarun Deol, 2 young journalists. So at the same time, if I get anything wrong, they are not to blame, I am to blame, because I am the one for whom a lot of this is very new. So let me try and answer this in 3 or 4, by way of answering maybe 3 or 4 key questions. One is the politics of it. So there is a lot of criticism right now from the opposition, from the commentariat, from me also, of the way the agricultural reform bills were passed in Rajya Sabha. I support the bills and I think they are very reformist, but to deny members of Rajya Sabha a vote when they demanded a vote and then to railroad these through a voice vote was not right. That should not have been done. So were these bills also done like that? This criticism arises because on the day these bills were passed in Lok Sabha and Rajya Sabha, the opposition was not present because the opposition was boycotting the parliament. So once again, just as you paint everything the same brush, when a big wind blows, everything gets blown with it. So this is being seen the same way as the farm reform bills. And one criticism with the farm reform bills was that, look, there's been no debate. These have not gone to a parliamentary committee because parliamentary committees then debate these over time. Now, so the answer to the first question is that essentially there is a difference. And that essential difference is that while it's true that the 2 houses of parliament passed these labor codes, 3 labor codes, one had been passed earlier in a full parliament, these 3 were passed in parliament in both houses when the opposition was not present, it is wrong to say, or it would be wrong to presume, that like the farm reform bills, these bills also did not go to a parliamentary committee. In fact, these bills went through a full committee process. These bills were presented in 2019. They went to Parliament's Committee on Labour, which has 31 members. It's headed by Bhartruhari Mehtab of BJD, Lamin Patnaik's party from Odisha. Of its 31 members, 16 are from BJP, of which 13 are in Lok Sabha, 3 in Rajya Sabha. That would pretty much reflect the numbers of the party in both houses. Congress had 1 in Lok Sabha, 2 in Rajya Sabha, then CPM, TRS, TMC, DMK, BSP, etc., etc., etc. They had generally 1 each in both houses, Sena, TRS, TMC, IUML, Muslim League, DMK, CPI also. They had 1 each, and the Congress people from Rajya Sabha included senior leader Oscar Fernandez, who knows a little bit more about, in fact, more than a little bit more about labor laws than most of us do. And similarly, the left also had people who understand trade union issues and have been leaders before. Now, that's how these codes were produced. In fact, the committee suggested 100 changes in the original laws as drafted by the government. Of those 100, 74 were now implemented. So this is now, these laws, labor codes have gone through the full committee process. That is an important thing to understand. Now, The second thing, from where do these labor codes come? Did this government suddenly wake up one day and said, we have to reform our labor laws? Yes, they talked about reforming labor laws, and many governments and many parties have put the idea of reforming labor laws in their manifestos. Now, labor laws in India are complex because labor is a concurrent subject. So, center can design laws, states can pass laws. So, at this point, we had 40 odd central laws and 100 odd state laws, or maybe if you had all the states, there might be more. So, it was in 1999 that Atal Bihari Vajpayee's government set up the National Labour Commission, the second National Labour Commission. The first National Labour Commission was set up in 1966 under Justice Gajendra Gadkar. The second Labour Commission was set up by the Vajpayee government in 1999, headed by Ravindra Verma, who was not a former BJP person. Ravindra Verma was a former Congress person. He had been an elected MP from the Congress in 1969 when the party split. He went with the older side of the party, and he also served as labor minister in Morarji Desai's national cabinet between 1977 and 1980. Old Gandhian, very highly respected. So he headed this labor commission. This labor commission then gave a recommendation that, look, there are too many laws and they are contradictory and they cause confusion. So they should all be combined together in 4 or 5 codes. That's how the process of labor codes came in. Now, there was a 10-year hiatus with UPA. When NDA came in, they picked up the thread from the labor commission report and took it forward. Now, the second question, does this simplify the labor laws or further complicates them? If there are 411 clauses still and 286 pages, what are they simplifying? But we have to know what was there earlier. We told you there were 40 plus central laws and 100 plus state laws. What this does is, this subsumes 29 of the most important central laws into these 4 codes, and the remaining central laws also pretty much get covered, or various aspects of them get covered by these new codes. And similarly, states can always pass their own laws, but this covers for a lot of those. If you just want to see a count of the number of existing laws this subsumes, then the code on wages, you will see the full names on the screen as I talk about each code. The code on wages subsumes 4 important laws. Payment of Wages Act of 1936. And if you think that law is ancient, I will just tell you about one that's even older. Payment of Wages Act 1936, Minimum Wages Act, Payment of Bonus Act, and Equal Remuneration Act, that is a law of 1976, and Indira Gandhi emergency time law. So all 4 get subsumed in the new Wages Act. Then the Safety, Health and Working Conditions Act, code now, subsumes 13 laws. And this is where you see a dog's breakfast, because it looks like governments over the years are passing a law for every section of the workers. That means any section of the workers which had some maibab or some leader in a position of power got a law passed for them. I'll give you the examples. Factories Act, Plantation Labor Act, only for plantation labor, Mines Act, that is for mining labor, Working Journalists and Non-Journalists Act. Unfortunately, it used to be called earlier Working Journalists and Non-Working Journalists Act. And the joke used to be that all you journalists are non-working. So that's what the employers used to tell us. So Working Journalists and Non-Journalists Act, Motor Transport Workers Act, a separate law for motor transport workers, Bidi and Cigar Workers Act, what about hookah and what about cigarettes, right? Then Contract Labor Act, then Sales Promotion Employees Act. So as I told you, whichever section of employees had a maibab someplace got a law passed about themselves. Cinema Workers and Cinema Theatre Workers Act, then Dock Workers Act, and Building and Construction Workers Act. So all these 13 have been combined into this one code now. That this definitely is a simplification, which means that all fair welfare measures, all safety measures or requirements or obligations will apply to all these workers equally. There is no need to have so many separate laws. That was a nightmare for the courts, for judges, for the lawyers, for the employers, but most of all for employees, because half the time an employee wouldn't know which law covers me and which one doesn't. Then the third code on social security, that combines 9 laws. And once again, which are these 9 laws? This is Employees Compensation Act, ESI Act, EPF Act, Employment Exchange Compulsory Notification of Vacancies Act. Now, many of you may not know this. In fact, I don't think any of the millennials will know this, but there is a law that says that if any organization has vacancies, before it advertises those, before it seeks out applications for those vacancies, it has to notify the nearby employment exchange. It used to be a big deal in times when I was in school and college. No longer. So this law now gets subsumed. There is the Maternity Benefit Act, Payment of Gratuity Act, Cinema Workers Welfare Fund Act, Building and Construction Workers Welfare Funds Act, and Unorganized Workers Welfare CESS Act. All these get combined into this new code on social security. And finally, the most important, the code on industrial relations. When in the context of labor, we say industrial relations, essentially we means union activity, workers' rights, right to go to strike. So in fact, if any of you are studying management or HR, you will know that IR is very much a part of HR, although these two are different things. IR is industrial relations, which essentially means management or employer-employee relations or management-union relations. So this is the most important code, I would say, in many ways. It's also the most reformist. This subsumes 3 existing laws, major laws. Trade Union Act, it is of 1926. I told you, I'll tell you a law that's older than 1936. So 1926 Trade Union Act. Then Industrial Employees Standing Orders Act 1946. Underline that. Industrial Employees Standing Orders Act 1946. Then Industrial Disputes Act 1947. Industrial disputes is essentially strikes, etc. These three have been subsumed into one. These three are very old laws. Now, what the government says is, and what those supporting the reform say, is that look, because you had such a plethora of laws which often contradicted each other, just the simplification of those laws is a reform in itself. Although it's always a struggle, you have to make a compromise and find a balance between labor rights and industrial ease. So it's always tough to bring about labor reforms. Now, what do these reforms do? Generally, one, it takes away the redundancy of multiple adjudicatory forums, particularly in labor law disputes. For example, if there was a labor law dispute, right now you have a board of conciliation, after that you have courts of inquiry, after that you have labor courts, then you have tribunals, and then you have a national tribunal. So a poor worker can spend all his or her life going through this process, and a smart, rich employer can put the whole thing in orbit. Similarly, an honest, sincere employer can be sent on a similar chase, particularly by organizations where unions may be run by outsiders or politicians with other motives. Right now, with the changes, there will only be 2 authorities or only 2 forums. One will be a conciliation officer and second will be a tribunal. So 5 becomes 2. This multiplicity gets simplified. Some absurdities have not been taken away, but they've at least been halved in their intensity or in their impact. Let me explain to you how. Factories Act, for example, defined a factory. They said a factory as a place that employed 10 workers if it uses electricity and 20 if it doesn't use electricity. Now, can there be anything these days that doesn't use electricity? Nevertheless, this has not been set aside. What they've done is they've just doubled the numbers. So with power, 20, without power or without electricity, 40. That's the reason I said the absurdity has not been taken away, but the absurdity, the impact of the absurdity has been halved. The next big change, which is again a very important change, it now says that earlier laws barred women from certain activity or nighttime work because it was seen to be hazardous. Now women can work any hours provided it has their consent and they are given the necessary protections and all. And also, no job is now considered too hazardous for women, which is sensible at a time when women are becoming fighter pilots with your Air Force. So these big new changes have taken place. The other significant change I like, and which I think works in the workers' interest, is that labor laws and protections have now been extended to casual workers, temporary workers, contract workers who have the same status as employees now, also migratory workers. A migratory worker has now been defined in terms of the income. So anybody who is going from one state and working in another and is paid less than 18,000 rupees a month is a migratory worker and will be covered and registered. So that is a big change. And also this now includes gig workers and platform workers. Platform workers, you can understand people who work on the patri, pavement, etc., etc., dhabas. But gig workers is a very important new concept. So who are the gig workers? They are people who work for ride-sharing companies, people who work for food and grocery delivery, people who work for content and media, I don't understand very easily, e-marketplaces, etc., etc. People, that means your Amazon delivery person, your Ola driver, your all the various people who come and deliver stuff to you, they are considered part of the gig economy. They will now be registered and they will be entitled to benefits. In many cases, the aggregator, say aggregator means who runs these services, will be asked to set aside 1-2% of its turnover for the welfare, for the welfare fund of these employees. Now, if you want to look at reform which helps employment generation, or which might be called pro-employers, in fact, even Bharatiya Mazdoor Sangh, which is affiliated to the RSS and BJP, has today issued a statement, criticized these changes in the labor code because these are pro-employer. These are essentially all there in the code on industrial relations. Now, these say, first of all, the definition of a company which has to seek the government's permission before shutting down. Earlier was if it employed more than 100 people. The original law said something else. Mrs. Gandhi in 1976 in her socialist wave made it 300, reduced it. Then when she came back, it was further reduced to 100. So if you employed more than 100 people, to shut your business down, also you had to essentially take a license from the government. So we had a strange situation where you couldn't be born without a government license, where you couldn't die without a government license if you were a company. So to set up a company, you needed license. To shut down a company, you needed a license if you employed more than 100 people. So the licensing system for starting a company was pretty much finished in 1991 with the license quota Raj. The second didn't happen because labor law reform never took place. So what this code does is, this does not give an employer total hire and fire. The power it gives the employer is that as long as the employer only has 300 members on the staff of an enterprise, he or she can shut it down without going to the government. So this law has not gone, except the size from 100 has gone to 300, which is a big change. You know what happens when you have 100? Then somebody wants 500 employees, but you think, look, if my business fails, what will I do? I'll have to go to an inspector and there'll be lots of trouble. So the person sets up one company or one organization in one name with 98 employees, another in another city with 95 employees, or sometimes in the same area, three or four or five different units. That affects your productivity, costs, etc. And a lot of people who need to employ a lot of people or have seasonal orders like garment exporters, they then decide to go to Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Vietnam, etc. Countries which have simpler labor laws. So you get an order for 1 million shirts, you make those 1 million shirts, and then you say my business is over. So those freedoms have now been given. Essentially, they've gone from a minimum of 100 employees to 300 employees. And the second thing it does is that any company that has more than 100 employees right now has to issue standing orders. The standing orders then decide the employees' classification, the category in the company, the manner of informing them about working hours, holidays, paydays, wages, etc., etc., and their roles, etc., or termination of employment, or grievance redressal mechanism. These are all standing orders. Now, the new code says that standing orders will be necessary only if you employ more than 300 people. Essentially, what that means is that as long as an employer has less than 300 people, it is a reasonably free system of hire and fire. That's the reason Bharatiya Mazdoor Sangh is protesting against it. But that is also the reason it is seen to be adding ease of doing business, because this will no longer discourage people from imagining larger scale than 98 or 99 employees. That is a big change as far as I am concerned. So this is my honest effort at decluttering a very major change. You want to read more of it in detail, or if you're a lawyer or inclined towards labor law, we are sharing with you links of all the new codes. You can read them. I'm also sharing with you links of some of the stories that Moshmi has done on these codes. You can see those also. But I think if you see the essence of these strike a good balance. So the answer to the first question, no, these were not railroaded the way agricultural bills were. Although those days opposition was not present in parliament, these have gone through the process of parliamentary committee scrutiny. Number two, that these actually simplify things by combining a lot of contradictory laws into four codes. And next, it does help many workers in unorganized sector. And fourth, most important, it does help employment generation by giving employers a little more freedom than they had before. So those are the big changes. Now I will finish it with a story, and I know sometimes you might wonder that how come I try to pick up a story that looks so disconnected or so irrelevant and try and connect it. But frankly, if you can connect cricket with everything, I can also connect a conversation I had with Mr. Om Prakash Chatala with labor law reform. And this is a conversation that took place many years ago when he used to be Chief Minister of Haryana, and he had come for one of our functions. I used to work at the Indian Express then, and I was going down to see him off in the lift after he was finished. Now, as we were chatting, making polite conversation, he said to me, Gupta sahab, main to na apne jo tourist spots hai Haryana mein, unko bhi privatize kar raha hun. To maine kaha, Chaudhary sahab, aap to purane socialist ho, aap privatize kar rahe ho, aapko to nationalize karna chahiye. So he said to me, Gupta sahab, nationalization to wahan kaam kare jahan pe bleep 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 nationalism ho. Now, why am I applying it here? So let me use it in this context. You had the most perfect labor laws in the world and hundreds of labor laws. But what use were they if there was no labor, in the sense that if no employment was being created in the organized sector? And I will give you some numbers. The NSSO data of 2011-12 tells you that of the 47.4 crore workers in India, only 17%, that is about 1 in 6, were in the organized sector. So these laws that existed had excluded 5 out of 6 already. And these were pampering the already pampered employees in the organized sectors. When I say pampered, I don't mean pampered per se, but pampered in comparison to those who were not in the organized sector. And because these laws suited these people, also essentially the PSU employees, etc., and employees in public utilities like, say, railways, these were protected. This was a big vested interest which has now been broken. That's the reason I see this as a very major reform. Nothing is perfect. This also must have imperfections which will come up in the course of time. But I do think on balance, this is a very important reform. And this should enable Indian entrepreneurs to open up to the idea of scale.